Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is the living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary. Now, you might be familiar with that quote, but that was something said by innovative industrialist Steve Jobs, a former CEO of Apple. When he said this, he'd just been diagnosed with cancer, and he'd clearly had some time to reflect on life and death. It seems he was trying to answer the question, how should imminent death change the way that you live? Now, Jobs' motto here is a nice sentiment, isn't it? The call to follow your heart, to listen to your inner voice, to become what you truly want. It reminds me a little of that chorus from that 70s song by the Master's Apprentices, do what you want to do, be what you want to be, yeah. And I suspect that if you mention that to most people today in Perth, that they'd agree that this is a wise way to live, to shut everything else out and to follow your own desires, to look inwardly and to trust in yourself for direction in life. Well, in the passage tonight from Psalm 49, we find another man who has been reflecting on life and death and how we should live. He too has wisdom to give us, wisdom on what to do with our limited time. And let me tell you, these two versions of wisdom are like black and white. They could not be more different. The wisdom from this psalm isn't just a throwaway line that's nice to read. It's for all people, for the low and the high, the rich and the poor, everyone. And it's wisdom that everyone needs to take note of, because it concerns our death and how we should live because of it. This wisdom that the psalmist talks about is the answer to something that has puzzled the psalmist. It's a riddle that needs to be solved, according to verse 4. And that riddle is something that we've all struggled with. Why is it that people like Steve Jobs, who have no regard for God, why do they seem to do so well? Now, Jobs was a worldwide cultural icon. He was adored by millions. Some even hailed him as a hero. And yet, at the same time, Christians are vilified just for holding to a traditional view of marriage. Now, why do those who say, trust in yourself, follow your own heart, why do they do well, while those who say, trust in God, seem to do poorly at life? Now, this is the riddle that the psalmist is out to solve. And to do so, he outlines three things, three wise ways to use your time. And so they are, first, don't trust in wealth. Second, don't trust in yourself. And thirdly, trust in God to save you. So that's don't trust in wealth, don't trust in yourself, but trust in God to save you. So, don't trust in wealth. Well, why say this? Why, given our limited time on earth, are we not to trust in wealth? Well, firstly, it can't buy life. In the Old Testament, sometimes people and animals were dedicated as sacrifices to God, like what happened with Abraham and Isaac. But in certain circumstances, this could be avoided if a ransom was paid. If the right amount of money was paid, then that person or animal could be redeemed from sacrifice. And that's what the psalmist is referring to here in verse 7. But notice what he's saying about it. He says that in reality, it doesn't work. Truly, he says, no man can ransom another. Now, it doesn't matter how much you can pay. You can't give to God the amount that your life is worth. Now, I can guarantee you that you will never pick up the newspaper one day and see splashed across the front page a picture of death shaking hands with a billionaire. The headline reading, "Rich man comes back to life after agreeing on multi-million dollar life extension." Worldwide leaders have hailed the life extension agreement between the Grim Reaper and billionaire as an extraordinary agreement that will reshape life as we know it. Following the formal signing of the deal, the Prime Minister said the momentous and historic agreement affirmed that life would no longer be taken from us without our consent. As long as you've got the funds, he added. Now, jokes aside, that's ridiculous, isn't it? You're not going to see something like that. It's not going to happen. There are no life extensions for purchase. Once death comes knocking, all the money in the world won't be able to buy you even a single extra breath. And of course, you know that's the reality, don't you? You can't buy life, no matter how wealthy you are. Now, you also can't take your wealth with you. Now, the psalmist sees that no matter how much wealth you amass in life, when death comes, you leave empty-handed. You can't cash out a check after death. You won't collect any more paychecks. You won't get any more retirement savings. You meet death with nothing. And so, to live as if amassing wealth is important, well, it's the definitive example of futility, because you don't take any of it with you. Now, you may have heard the line that goes, the one who dies with the most toys wins. Well, the truth is, the one who dies with the most toys is still dead. Now, I wonder if any of you remember the telco named Crazy John's. This was a well-known company from in Australia from a few years back. The owner was a man named John Ilhan, and at one point he was named the richest Australian under 40 years of age, the wealthiest Aussie under 40. Now, can you imagine that, being the wealthiest person for your age in an entire country? That'd be pretty incredible, right? Think of the things that you could buy with that kind of money. And yet, sadly, this man, only a few years after being named richest man for his age, well, he died. He died one morning, just suddenly, on his morning walk. And what happened to his riches then? What happened to all those years of work, all that wealth earned, all those investments? Well, his wife got them. He couldn't use them anymore, could he? And that is the reality. The one who dies with the most toys is still dead. And so, as the psalmist points out in verse 10, and no matter what you do, your wealth still ends up being left with others. You simply can't take it with you. But maybe you already know this. Maybe you're well aware that your checks will bounce in the next life. And yet, do we really live like we believe it? Do we really live as if death could come at any moment, stripping us of all our wealth? Because if you're like me, you probably don't think about death that often. It's not exactly a great dinner party conversation topic, is it? So instead, you push it right to the back of your mind. You do anything you can to avoid thinking about it. Maybe you fill your life with other things, distractions, things that will keep you focused on the here and now. Television, relationships, holidays, food, real estate, possessions. All things that keep us looking down rather than ahead at what's to come. But maybe you're not distracted. Maybe instead you're one of those people who throws themselves into something you think will last. Forget about the temporary distractions, you say. I want something that'll go the distance. I want something that will outlast me. Now, for you, maybe that's family. Maybe you're all about putting family first, raising the next generation, or perhaps the generation after that. Or maybe for you, it's work. Putting all of your energy, all of your focus into what you do for a living. You know, making a name for yourself. Now, don't get me wrong here, family and work are both by no means bad things. They're both given to us by God and they're for our good. But to have them as the most important thing in life, to, I guess, define yourself in that way, to be all about making something that lasts here on earth, well, the psalmist records what the result is for those who aim at this. In the end, he says, the only thing that actually lasts is the grave. So he writes, their graves are their homes forever, their dwelling places to all generations, though they called lands by their own names. So don't be like that. Don't be about building lasting things here on earth, because the only thing that actually lasts is death. And it's here that the psalmist ends with what we could call a summary in verse 12. So here we find more clarification on just why not to place your trust in wealth. And that's because, in the end, everyone dies. Everyone. Whether rich or poor, wise or foolish, everyone dies. Now, it's very easy to get a glimpse of this in the city, I think. So on one hand, you've got these towering skyscrapers filled with power brokers working for powerful companies, earning a plethora of cash. And then just on the very same street below, you've got homeless people are forced to beg for money to survive. And the psalmist says, in the end, we all end up the same. The one who trusts in wealth, the one who searches for riches, who places their hope in them, ends up just the same as the one without. They both die and end life with nothing. So don't trust in wealth. Don't have it as your number one priority, because it can't buy life. You can't take it with you. And in the end, you still die. But the psalmist isn't finished. And here we reach our second point. Don't trust in yourself. Now, it's here that we see the bigger issue at hand. You see, trusting in wealth is just a symptom of trusting in yourself. Now, what do I mean when I say trust in yourself? Well, essentially, I think it's saying, I don't need God. I can look after myself. If I pick the right career, if I get the right job, if I get the next promotion, well, then I'll be okay. Life will be comfortable. I'll be able to do what I want, where I want. In other words, I won't have to place my trust in God, because I'll have sorted out everything for myself. Now, the psalmist describes those who act this way in verse 13 as those who have foolish confidence. To have confidence in yourself in this way is foolish. To trust in yourself isn't smart. But it is popular. Now, verse 13 again says that those with foolish confidence are approved of by others. And that certainly is the case today, isn't it? If tomorrow you said to someone at work, or perhaps someone at uni, or maybe one of your neighbours, that you are quitting your job to look for something with better pay, better prospects, they wouldn't question you, would you? Would they? They'd most likely pat you on the back and say, good on you. You've got to look out for number one. And that's exactly what we're doing, I think, when we think that way. We're placing ourselves at number one. God, he's somewhere later down the list, or not on the list at all. That's what trusting in yourself is. It's placing your life in your own hands with you at the helm. And in the face of this, the psalmist says, it may be popular, but it's foolish. And it's foolish because it's perilous. So look with me at verse 14. Now the fools who trust in themselves are like sheep appointed for Sheol, like sheep appointed to end up in death. Now at YGC earlier this year, we played a get to know you game where each of us had to say what our favourite animal was. I can tell you firsthand that not a single soul said my favourite animal is a sheep. And you can guess why that's the case, can't you? It's because sheep are weak, they're skittish, they're dumb, they can't look after themselves. They need a shepherd to guide them. They're gullible too. In fact, they're so gullible that you can lead them to their death. You can literally lead them to the slaughterhouse. And here we can see the striking difference between the wisdom of the psalm and the wisdom of the world. Because the psalmist is saying the sheep are the ones who boast of their wealth. They're the ones who trust in themselves, the ones who seem to have life in their own control. They're the ones who are being led to the slaughterhouse. They don't have control. They're simply on their way to death, to an eternal grave. And that's why it's perilous to trust in yourself. It's perilous to pursue that popular path. Some of you may know of the well-known atheist Christopher Hitchens. He died of cancer a few years ago now. But after he was diagnosed, he wrote an article journaling his cancer treatment. And in it, he said this when describing what it was like. He said, "You feel swamped with passivity and impotence, dissolving in powerlessness like a sugar lump in water." Now, Hitchens' description is a valid one, I think, not just for terminal illness, but for all of life. We are all ultimately powerless. We're all slowly dissolving in death. Or, as the psalmist puts it in verse 12, we're all like the beasts that perish. And so it's the height of foolishness to trust in ourselves, to say that we're in control of life. That's simply not the reality. And all that thinking like this will lead to is an eternity in the grave. Well, so far we've been taught don't trust in wealth, don't trust in yourself. So what then are we to do? Well, the answer is clear, isn't it? The thing we need to do is trust in God. And that's for two reasons. Firstly, he owns life. And secondly, he redeems. Now, there's no doubt that God owns all of life. He created all things. He created humanity. He created you and me. He's the sovereign ruler of the universe. The Bible's clear on all these points. And so, of course, he is ultimately the one who's in control of our lives, that's whether we acknowledge him or not. And that's why the psalmist can say in verse 7, "Truly no man can ransom another or give to God the price of his life." Now, that's why no amount of money will allow you to own your own life. It's because God owns it. And you can't pay him what it's worth. If I went to a Porsche dealer and said to them, "Look, I want to own a brand new Porsche. Here's $100. Okay, now, I wouldn't own that Porsche. I wouldn't even be close to owning it. A new Porsche is going to be worth much, much more than that. And the truth of the matter is, your life is worth much, much more than that. It's worth more than you can afford to pay. And that's why God owns it and not you. And if God is the owner of your life, then he's the one that you need to rely on. He's the one you need at the helm. He's the one to trust in. Well, secondly, God redeems. So he saves from death those who trust in him. Now, that's not the death that everyone faces. We will all die. But the eternal death, the eternal grave that awaits the foolish who trust in themselves, that's what God saves from. And notice the confidence that the psalmist has in verse 15. "But God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol." He will. That's the great news of this psalm. That's the wisdom that the psalmist is telling us about. That's the answer to his riddle. When death comes to those who trust in him, it's not an eternal grave that waits, but God himself. It's God waiting with open arms to receive those who trust in him. Those who have seen the wisdom in living life according to eternity, not according to prosperity. those who have understood that chasing after wealth and importance now means nothing in light of eternity. And so this means then, according to verses 16 to 20, that we're not to be worried when others become rich or when others have more than us. We're not to stress out if we don't have the latest gadget, the latest car, or a job that pays the right amount of money, because those things won't last. And any favour you might gain from having those things won't follow you beyond the grave. If you chase after those things in this life, then you're bound to end up, like it says in verse 19, going with those to the generation of their fathers who will never again see light. So why risk it? Why risk eternity? Like the psalmist says, we will indeed be redeemed from death if we're trusting in God. So why risk it? But there's something more here. We have even more reason to be confident than even the psalmist did. And that our place in history puts us in the incredible position of knowing just how God ransoms us. Yes, God will ransom my soul from the power of Sheol because of Jesus. He is the price that needed to be paid to ensure that we're received by God. Christ's death paid the price so that our death would not be eternal. And Jesus himself points this out in Mark 10:45, where he says, "The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Christ's life is that ransom. It's the ransom needed for our souls to be redeemed from death. It's the only ransom possible. Money, wealth, and power, they won't do it. Only Jesus can. And brothers and sisters, he has. So the question is then, what are you going to do in response? And so I'd like to suggest three things that I think we can do to show that we're trusting in God to redeem us. Three things we can do to be like the wise person in this psalm rather than the foolish person. So firstly, remember what you have. Remember that what you have comes from God. So this psalm, I think, is particularly applicable for us, given that we live in a part of the world that would probably be considered to be in the top 2% of the world in terms of wealth. We are very well off. Now, the majority of the world does not have well-paying jobs like us. It does not have its own housing like we do. It probably doesn't even have the ability to feed itself daily like we can. We are incredibly blessed. But this puts us in a dangerous position. John Calvin once wrote, "Men are undoubtedly more in danger from prosperity than from adversity. For when matters go smoothly with them, they flatter themselves and are intoxicated by their success." Now, that's true, isn't it? We're likely to pat ourselves on the back. That's the danger we're living in affluent Australia. We're likely to fall into the trap that this psalm warns us against, of thinking that we're to thank for the abundant lives that we lead, that we are the ones in control of our lives. Now, the way to avoid this is to remember that actually all that we have comes from God. It's only when we have that perspective that we will understand that life is more than just our possessions. It's more than the temporal things we can gain in this life. So remember that what you have comes from God. Second, use your time and money well. For those of you approaching retirement, what do you have planned? John Piper uses a well-known illustration in his, from his book entitled Don't Waste Your Life. In it, he tells the story of a retired couple who spend their later years sailing on a yacht and collecting seashells. He says, "Picture them before Christ at the great day of judgment. Look, Lord, see my shells." Now that is a tragedy. So for those thinking about retirement, don't be like that. We can be thankful that here at Bull Creek, we have many godly seniors who are wonderful examples of retirement lived in service to God. We younger folk can learn from that. We too can wisely use our time and money to glorify God. Thirdly, have an eternal perspective. Too often we believe the lie that the world is constantly striving to sell us. The lie that this life is all that there is. That the most important thing to do is to do what makes you happy. You know, to get the right job, to own your own home, to get married. And yet, it's overwhelmingly clear from this psalm that eternity is what really matters. So the question then is, when you're making plans for your life, when you're mapping out how the next part of life will go, are you thinking only about life here and now, or are you thinking with an eternal perspective? Because those two paths, I think, will end up looking quite different. It'll be the difference between choosing a job that pays well and has great career rewards but sucks up all of your time, or choosing a job that doesn't pay as much but allows you to serve in your local church. It'll be the difference between choosing a nice house to buy in a respectable area that takes up all of your budget, or choosing to buy in a cheaper area so that maybe you can use the extra money to support missionaries. There are many ways in which we can use our time and money wisely for God's glory. The key is to have an eternal perspective. So we've heard the wisdom of this psalm. Don't trust in wealth. Don't trust in yourself. Trust in God to save you. Andrew Lynn knew this. He was another man that knew death was imminent. He trusted in God, in Christ's saving work for him. It's what enabled him to have, as one of the final things he wrote on Facebook, a quote from that Ecclesiastes passage we read earlier. And so God has received him, just like we read in the psalm. He has entered into eternity to be with the one who ransomed him from death. So don't buy the lie that the world is selling, that the only reality is this life and what we make it. God has ransomed us through saving us through Jesus. That's the reality. So I leave you then with a question. How will your death change the way that you live?